Yeah, good afternoon. My taste buds are drooling after those pictures. That was great. But now we're going to switch from fruit crops to vegetable crops. In particular, utility in U.S. Production, some nutritional ideas, and consumer preferences. The general theme is opportunities and challenges. And this project over the last 10 years has provided a plethora of both opportunities and challenges that I'm going to share with you. Our research team, Rutgers University, has partnered with the University of Massachusetts, Florida, and Penn State. We have extension specialists like Dr. Jim Simon, Ramu Govindasamy, economics, Brian Schilling, extension people like Gene McAvoy from Florida, Frank Mangan from Massachusetts, and in New Jersey, Pete Nitschke, Rick Van Ranken, and Wes Klein. First, we need to see what the market is. This is a market-driven approach to how to connect Asian crops to the Asian marketplace. You have to know your target. All too often, as horticulturalists, we love to plant all these plants, and some of them sometimes don't have too much commercial potential, and we may be spinning our wheels. So we try to target better what is in demand at the marketplace first. So in this first slide here, this is the growth rate of different ethnic populations. And as you can see, the Hispanic growth rate in the previous decade has been 20%, and the Asian growth rate has been 19%, the two fastest growing populations out of a dozen other ethnicities. Now here's the prediction of what the population of these consumers are going to be. Basically, the United States is going to grow over the next couple of decades from 200 million to 250 million to 300 million. And a lot of that growth will be from Asian populations, increasing to about 40 million residents, and other ethnic groups, especially the Hispanics, will be increasing quite a bit as well. We focused on the East Coast, from Maine to Florida, 16 states. So by using the U.S. Census population, we looked at these 16 states and we see that the number of Chinese residents is almost a million. The Asian Indian population is almost a million, and they will be continuing to rise. Most of our work is in New York, New Jersey, where there's over 500,000 Chinese and about 400,000 Asian Indians. We surveyed these two key demographic groups, Chinese and Asian Indians. We wanted to assess the food crop demand that we have in this specific area. So our group, our team, developed an ethnic consumer survey. It went out to about 1,100 people, 275 Chinese, 275 Asian Indians throughout the East Coast. Many of these residents were recent citizens, so we needed bilingual interviewers. We got that done to see what we were dealing with and how much they spend on ethnic Asian vegetables. In this case, the Chinese typically spent, like on bok choy, about $2.30 every time they went shopping. And we did this for eggplant, spinach, snow peas, etc. Similarly, for the Indian produce, their favorite one was bitter gourd, where they're spending almost $2.50 each time they purchase. And then there's eggplant, bottle gourds, mustard leaves. These are more the fruiting vegetables. This was our first survey. And when we put those surveys together in terms of how often they shop and how much they spent, on the East Coast, the Chinese produce dollar for ethnic Asian crops was almost $300 million. Annually, and the Indian market was $230 million annually. So that's a pretty large market to begin with, and we now know, you know, how much to approximate in terms of what the growth is out there. Here are some of those summer fruiting vegetables mostly, and some spring and fall crops. Baby bok choy, edamame, loofah, napa cabbage, eggplant, mustard, perilla snow peas. For the Asian Indian groups, the top 10 pretty much were amaranth, again, a different type of eggplant, fenugreek, ridge gourd, bottle gourd, white pumpkin. That's what the survey told us in terms of how much demand there was in terms of dollars. And then how many households bought ethnic greens and herbs. Then we had another survey. Once we saw how much these groups were consuming leafy greens and medicinal herbs, we got a different perspective. And here you can see Shanghai bok choy was the leading candidate. Sugar pea tops, almost 100 out of 250 households bought them on a regular basis. What did some of those Chinese greens and herbs look like? Chives, garland chrysanthemum, Malabar spinach, amaranth, sugar pea tops, or beans. What did some of the Asian greens look like? Purslane. We often think of that as a weed. Nightshade. We always think of that as a poisonous plant around here in Jersey and the East Coast. Indian sorrel spinach. And radish greens. So now we narrowed it down from several hundred possibilities that our team discussed, what was practical, what was economical, and ranked them according to how much people were paying for them and what's the feasibility of what we could grow. So for these leafy greens and herbs, Shanghai bok choy ranked first, Chinese broccoli second, sugar pea tops three, and spinach four. For the Indian population with the same procedure, ranking number one was turmeric, which we can't really grow. It's very tropical and time intensive. Radish greens were right up there. Indian sorrel spinach, fenugreek, amaranth. So that gave us a real good assessment of the market demand on the East Coast. Now we had to test how well we could grow these in the Northeast up in Massachusetts, in the Mid-Atlantic in New Jersey, and in the Southeast in Florida. We put them through a funnel system after we identified these ethnic crops, genus and species. We have assessed the supply and demand, and we had to now prioritize our research approach. So we decided we're going to have the most promising being replicated trials in research, and other fairly promising ones just put single strip trials out there of a line of the plant to just see how good they would be. And in this way, these were the top four, bok choy, broccoli, sugar pea tops, chives, and we also threw in, for just demonstration, is a regular spinach and garlic chrysanthemum for the Chinese population. Similarly, we did that for the Asian Indians, and I'm going to give you a little idea of what that looked like. The team spent a lot of time in the field over several years and took a lot of parameters in measurement. First of all, getting a Latin name right was often a problem. The common names varied sometimes, but we now know the Latin names pretty well. The brassicas were definitely problematic. We measured the plant height, how wide it was, the leaf length, leaf width, how uniform it grew, how vigorously it grew, if it flowered, and the fresh weight in terms of yield and later on dry weights. And here's one of the leaders that many of our Chinese farmers are already growing, and we were trying to actually sort of Americanize a lot of these Asian crops by putting them into standard American plasticulture with trickle irrigation and standard fertility for these crops. And Shanghai bok choy is excellent, grew rapidly. The only problem is typically striped flea beetle has some damage to it. There's a few good seed sources now. Germinates well, Rapis chinensis. Grows well on plastic culture, even in the heat. And then we had visitors that were pretty much expert in these crops and give us their assessment of how things were growing, and later on how things were tasting. We added up all these morphological features from Florida, New Jersey, UMass, and they tended to vary a little bit. Our seasons are different, our growth zones are different, and that's to be expected. And then we gave them a general plant uniformity and vigor rating. So in this example, bok choy really looks like a wonderful plant to grow, especially with Chinatown in New York City, Philadelphia, Baltimore, Atlanta. Another example was sugar pea, which is not grown very much. Often it's imported. Johnny's and Evergreen provided good seed for us. That's the sugar pea growing with trickle irrigation. Some years it grew better than others, depending on, we've had erratic springs. Sometimes they're very cold, sometimes they're very warm. But everybody, when you clip those sugar pea tips, it was a little sensitive to second harvest. And again, we took the morphological features. The variability wasn't too different between these two growing sites, New Jersey and Massachusetts. And the fresh weight and dry weight. 1 year, Massachusetts was extraordinarily prolific. New Jersey didn't do so well, but the next year, Massachusetts wasn't doing too well, and New Jersey rebounded back. So we like to standardize and find out what the problems are, if it's not just weather. Moving over to the Indian crop performance, again, these were harvested one, two, and three times. In this example of all the Indian crops, Rumex, Rapinus, Trigonella, Amaranthus, we again took all these measurements, know their vigor and uniformity and their yield potential. Indian sorrel spinach, we used transplants, poke holes through the plastic, just like we do with typical vegetable transplant production on the East Coast. Sometimes we use white plastic, sometimes we use black plastic, always use trickle irrigation. And that's sort of how it looks just before harvest. Massachusetts and New Jersey grew it real well. We know there's a demand for it. When it came to fresh weight, boy, very productive both years. Radish. It's not the typical radish that many of our Chinese growers grow. This radish, you eat the leaves as a leafy green and not the root like some others. And there's tensiometers here to tell you how much water is going to them, so we had a good handle on that. We do harvest at different times to see how it's growing, but generally excellent yield. There was different color roots on different cultivars, purple root, white root. And I'm sure in some ways they may affect the phytonutrient levels of these plants. Germinating them in the greenhouse, transplanting them in the field, they grew well. That happens to be at Massachusetts. And Massachusetts did a little better than New Jersey 1 year, and then Florida really trumped us the following year. But by and large, these are all good yields, good uniformity, good vigor. And then the final example I want to talk about is Amaranthus. I've spent 30 years killing Amaranthus as a weed. Red root pigweed, who'd have thunk it? But it's actually, except for a few Amish people out in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, where they grind it into flour, I never heard of using it in a soup, a salad, a stir fry, and apparently quite a few people do. And I traveled around a bit and I saw that, and I have, a lot of my colleagues have seen it even more. So there's different colors. The tricolor is particularly interesting. We tend to think the more colors, the more antioxidants you get, whether there's lycopenes, anthocyanidins, etc. That all adds up to a healthier plant for different reasons, for human consumption. If you clip it down, it grows right back. So you get good regrowth. You can harvest it weekly. Minor insect damage, some leaf hoppers, some aphids. Just grows really well. It grows like a weed. But these are specific cultivars that are more civilized, more tasty, and more nutritious. So we're really encouraged by this one. Fresh weights look good, dry weights look good. But what really appeals to us at Rutgers is when things look red. That's our university color. We love tomatoes. We got a Rutgers tomato. In this case, we'd love to have a red amaranth. That color could be loaded with Wurac values and anthocyanins and polyphenols. And that goes to the lab where we have a good group of people assessing the nutritional value of some of these highly yielding varieties. There's a ton of amaranths out there. Years back, I worked with African amaranths that grew like 8 feet tall and had giant leaves and beautiful flower heads. They make good cut flowers, but in this case, this makes a really good food, and we see the amount in these different cultivars. There's like six cultivars there, AM14, 36, 38, and nitrogen, phosphorus, potassium, calcium, manganese, sulfur. That's a pretty good return for a supposed weed. It's very edible and tasty. And the micronutrients, they're way up there on the charts too. Manganese, iron, copper, boron, good stuff. And it's all significant. So there's some possibilities for breeding here to have even more of a superfood in the future. Rutgers has been breeding Rutgers superfood lettuce. Lettuce has hardly any nutritional value. But Dr. Ilya Raskin has recently produced a Rutgers lettuce that has three times the nutritional value of blueberries. This is phenomenal. We'll be releasing that, hopefully, after our grower trials over the next year or two. But at least the ORAC and nutrition is there, too. So we have some potential to do the same thing in amaranth. And I'd like to thank Dr. T.C. Lee, who about 16 years ago, he got me into this Asian stuff. He got like 16 cultivars of edamame from the Asian World Crop Research Center. I think it's in Taiwan. And I never saw so many different types of edamame. Some were viney, some were erect. But they all had really high levels of protein, high levels of sugar. And having grown up on just animal feed soybeans, I was shocked to see the human food potential there. And he was doing it because it was part of a NASA grant, what the astronauts are going to use to grow on Mars. And so this is the world's best vegetable food, and it comes from China and the Orient and other places like that. And we were just very privileged to be on this path of Asian research. So, in conclusion, we have a significant Asian market, a lot of consumers needing fresh produce. Often the produce in some of our markets, especially the big box stores, is old and it comes from thousands of miles away. Many of these Asian crops grow really well on the East Coast. We still need better crop knowledge. We're trying to do it our Americanized, typical way. We need to connect more with our growers that have some old country knowledge. But the farmers were informed of all these cultivar selections and are starting to introduce these into their farming practices. And then part of the challenge is getting distributors to understand that we can grow these crops. There is a market demand and opportunities, and they're starting to understand that. If you go to the Philadelphia wholesale market, now everybody's into ethnic Asian crops as well as other ethnicities. So there's a big switch on. We're hoping this goes even more mainstream than it's already going. So it's really increasing, and we think in the future nutritional and medicinal analysis is increasingly important. So we'd like to thank the USDA grants as well as a lot of other individual grants that we tied into here. NIFA and SCRI. And thanks, of course, to the American Society of Horticultural Science.
Thank you. Did you have any
Yes.
You didn't want to mention the pride. Have you do anything about the pride program, about the 18 digital?
Yes, we have a 300-page report. It was just done. That has the price per pound for dozens of these crops.
Okay, the one observation is when you buy the Napa cabbage,
Napa cabbage,
Asia market,
yes,
is only 69 cents per pound. If you go to Hannaford, it's $3.99 per pound. What are your comments on that?
There's two different prices you're seeing, a low price and a high price. In one area, it's probably oversupply. Another area, it's probably undersupply. We're trying to match the market demand with how much we grow in our area. That's why we're assessing the market need first. Instead of producing 500 acres of Napa, we are telling our growers we only need 300 acres of Napa to keep that price at $2.
Okay.
That's my best estimate right there. Yes? Suitcase seeds. Yes. A lot of our Asian friends tend to come in and have some seeds that they picked up and put in their suitcase and traveled across, and they're good choices. And they'll actually are starting to come to our growers because there's such a need, and they're going directly to the growers. Please plant this. There's Calasada. In California, there's a whole bunch out there. And Misong, I don't have it handy. We have all those seeds in this 300-page report, which should be available shortly. Yes?
One quick question. In big cities and small cities, there's some Oriental stores. I'm Chinese in nature, of course. And we go there buy. I always wonder where those vegetables come from.
Yes.
Are they produced in this country or they are imported from another region?
A higher percent is produced out of the United States. Actually, Canada produces quite a bit, and they get imported into the United States. We have a lot of growers where in Central Jersey, a lot of Chinese growers. They all serve Chinatown. So there is some fresher produce there, but still we don't have enough of a supply, and we're trying to see which crops are particularly in demand. Yes?
In your survey, did you say string beans pop up in your survey?
Yeah. Yard long? Oh, yeah, very popular. And I didn't go into string beans as an example, but they're hard to grow and grow straight. They tend to hit the ground and turn up. And the Chinese are very particular. They want them yard long straight, or else they go, oh no. Yes, that's a good crop. Yes, sir.
Within the various crops, did you look at which cultivars were more in demand? Like in amaranth, looking at, say, green varieties versus tricolor?
The green is by far in demand the most. These red and tricolors, nobody really goes for, but we can create a new market by saying the nutritional value may be more. These extra colors, extra antioxidants and polyphenols, that human health is driving this. And then it's not just the ethnic market, it's the mainstream market. All these groups are loving to stir fry and go to restaurants and stuff. Yes. Yeah. For instance, let's take cilantro. I'm used to growing cilantro for the Hispanic market, and they like it big, 10 inches, 12 inches. Chinese go, no, that's large, too fibrous. They want it 4 to 6 inches because it's tastier, it's tender. Each ethnic group, you've got to know how to sell it. And some ethnic groups want hot peppers, some want sweet peppers. And that's why we're interviewing all these people. What do you want? What tastes good to you? A lot of Hispanic peppers we work with, everybody thinks that the Puerto Rican people like hot peppers like the Mexican people do. No, they want sweet peppers more like the Italians do. So every ethnic group, you got to learn these. We're learning. We're on a steep learning curve as we interview people that give us a lot of information. Okay, Dr. Kim? You're welcome.